Please take your seats. School is now in session.
Welcome to Homeschooled Podcast.
Homeschooled.
The Homeschooled Podcast. Why? Because he was homeschooled.
It's time to document the journey.
Welcome back to Homeschooled Podcast, and I want to welcome back for the part two, Nate Klingon, and I'm excited. I've been looking forward to this, dude. We're going to do the part two of our last episode, which we wanted to really get into, comedy writing structure. Just tips, really, for anybody who's new, which I guess you're new, even though, like, you're more seasoned than new, which we talked about because you're good. You're just a natural. But also because you're already living it every day, you know. I think in my first year I wasn't, until my second year, that you are like living, breathing, eating, sleeping stand-up comedy. Like, you're at a comedy club probably every day. You're doing a mic. You're probably talking about comedy nonstop and still not sick of it. You know.
Yeah.
You know,
sure.
What I mean? So but we'll still say new. Thinking about starting stand-up, anybody in the performing arts that's thinking about it, hopefully this could be helpful to you, but specifically geared toward stand-up comedy. And we were sort of talking about, like, getting deep to find material just before we hit record. So what I'm going to do today is, I promised you I'm going to show you how to build an hour, or at least a guide to keep you organized and give you the tools to build the hour. And then I'll give you a couple of bullet points of the most important keys to always remember in stand-up and writing material and performing. As far as, like, coming up with material, you just said to me before we hit record that you're watching some of these guys and the things that they're talking about, and you could tell they went deep to find it, right? Like, we were just talking about, video games that you played when you were a kid and the ones that I played when I was a kid, and we are finding that there's probably a bit in there. You know what I mean? There's probably a bit in everything in your life, and you just haven't realized it yet.
Yeah.
So when you said to me that these guys are going deep, I want to point something out to you, that this stuff is right in front of you already. Something right now that you think about every day, you just never associated it with stand-up. There's something in your mind that, whether you feel guilty about it or you always remembered it because, you know, you got in trouble that day from your parents, or you just always felt bad about it, something you can take back, a really, really good memory, just whatever it is, a memory that just stands out. You think about it all the time, and it never occurred to you to make it into a stand-up bit. You're going to have, in 10 years, you're going to be doing stuff like that. You're going to remember something when you were 12. And it's just that as you become a seasoned comic, the more and more and more seasoned you are, the more, it's not like these ideas are just new popping in your head. That's a memory you always had and you never will forget. It's just that your mind is going, could that be a bit? And it has to do with the way you look at things. Because, like I said, you can look at anything and make a bit out of it. Anything. You can make anything funny. I'll share something with you. I was probably 3 years into stand-up, and someone said that to me. They go, you can make anything funny. And I go, not anything. And they're like,
not anything.
Yeah, I never forgot it, because they go, anything. And I go, yeah, what if I punch you in the mouth right now, is what I said to this dude. And he goes, yeah, well, what if when I landed, my tooth went, and I was like, oh, shit, he made it funny. And you know what I mean? Like, and I'm not saying everything's going to be brilliant and everything's going to be so, so funny. It's just that anything can be a bit. It's just how you look at it. Right now, you're excited about stand-up, and everything you see, you probably think that could be a bit. But even still, there's things that you're looking at or that you think about, and you're not even associating it with stand-up. You're just not, because down the road, you will start to go, why haven't I talked about that yet? You know what I mean? It's just going to happen, and I can't make you go through it sooner. You're just going to start in 10 years from now, and you're going to think of a story and be like, he was right. Like, you're looking at everything with different eyes. Right now, you're looking at things with 2-year eyes, and then it's going to be 5-year eyes, 10-year eyes. And that brings me to the very first bullet point that I want to discuss, is one of the most important things. The best material is, you have to be willing to be vulnerable. Vulnerability, you're not when you accept being vulnerable on stage, you will open so many doors for new material, because there's certain things right now your brain is blocking you from making it into a bit because you're embarrassed to talk about it, or you don't even want people to know that side of your life. Once you go vulnerable on stage and you don't care, you know how they say be comfortable with the silence? Mm-hmm. Same kind of attitude, but it's just, I don't care what you think of me.
Yeah.
You will find so many things that you can turn into a bit. Anything. You know, anything. There's certain stuff I'm doing on stage right now that for years I was ashamed of it. I didn't even think to do it on stage because I was like, that's one of the darkest places of my life that I would never want anyone to know about me. And then at one point you're going to go, oh, that's the good stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Dude. I kind of had a moment like that last night at this show, because like you've seen like the 10 that I've been doing lately, and I was doing, and so my girlfriend and I broke up like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's totally cool. It was my choice. But I have like four pretty solid 4 minutes that I like talking about her.
Yeah.
And just like our relationship. And I was like, dang. And I was like, how am I gonna, you know, still do that? And then I came up with something and just like, you know, talking about her as if she was my girlfriend. And then I just hit, and I'm just like, I love my girlfriend so much. We broke up. And
yeah.
Just doing that. And I didn't think anything of it. I was like, cool, that's just how I'll say it on stage.
Uh-huh.
And then last night I said it and it just like hit me. And I was like, oh, I was like, whoa, that, I didn't mean for that to, and it kind of like threw me off. I was just like, whoa, okay. And I think the audience kind of caught it. They were like, But I think that's, I mean, it's a less extreme version of what you're saying, but just kind of, I mean, you're letting the audience into your life pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You gotta be.
And then when you're doing bits that you already had, and then it's something life-changing happens like that, like you're not with the person anymore, and you a simple solution is just doing the same bits but in past tense, but that's a great way to go into it, is just be like, I love my girlfriend so much, and be like, we broke up. That's like a funny opener, and then you can still do the girlfriend jokes, but now they already know that you're not with her anymore, so it's more of like a past
tense. Yeah.
There's still, just at least for now, but then you're gonna like eventually keep writing new stuff that you're not even gonna want to do them anymore.
Yeah, I'm just gonna, yeah. But no, it was just crazy, like, ooh, this is like what it can be.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause like, I realized like I hadn't really like sat and thought about it. And for some reason I just decided to do it on stage when I had 10 minutes. I was like, whoa. And like the rest of the set, it just kind of felt more like, I don't know. It felt rather than like I was like talking to the audience and like just telling them jokes. It felt like more like the audience was just like, okay,
you were just being real.
Yeah, like we're going with you on this.
Yeah, you know what's funny, dude, is that my first album that I ever recorded, I had just separated from my wife, and I was doing an hour, and probably 40 minutes of it is on her, of my ex-wife, and we were separated, like, you know, we were about to file for divorce, and everybody in my family and friends knew that. And when I recorded this live special, and I had to do all the bits like I normally do, but all the bits were kind of like complaining about her, so it worked anyway. But a lot of the people in the audience knew me. And at one point, I did something similar towards the end of my set. I said something like, you know, yeah, but she's all right. You know, so I was trying to transition into the next bit, and we're like, she's fine. Like, I still love her. And then I like paused, and I realized like how fake I was being, because everyone in the audience, I wanted the audio to come out good for people that don't know me, but everyone in the audience knew me, and
they were like,
yeah, I felt really fake. And then I paused and went, no, I don't. Why am I lying to you guys? And the crowd exploded, dude. Just exploded.
No.
Yeah. Like, I was like, I love my wife. Then I paused and I went, I'm lying to you. No, I don't. Because half the room knew me, but the other half didn't, you know?
Dude, and you were like, That's it.
But it's just being real. And then the other point that I want to make is, so yeah, vulnerability and being real are kind of go hand in hand with each other. But when I say being real, another point I wanted to get at. Here, I feel like I'm jumping to the more powerful ones. Let's start at basics for people listening that are thinking about starting stand-up. My number one tip is don't wait. Every single person that I've ever talked to that said they were thinking about doing stand-up, and I said, why don't you do it already? They said, every single person has said, I'm getting my material ready. Okay? Mm-hmm. First of all, you're full of shit. I'm sure you're waiting for the material to be right for you to have 5 minutes to jump up on stage, but I guarantee you're not sitting there every single night writing it, because you would have been up on stage already. And also, it's never going to be ready. I got news for everybody out there listening that wants to start stand-up. The first set you ever have, odds are you'll never tell those jokes again. And if you do, they sure as hell ain't going to stay in your set a year later. And if they are, you're doing stand-up wrong. Because you should be constantly learning and writing better and becoming better at writing and learning what works and what doesn't. So you should not be doing the same things you did the first time you ever stepped on stage. And I'm just saying this for people that are thinking about starting. I'm not saying it to you. So never, ever wait. You're not even going to say that stuff again. It's not about the material. It honestly isn't. In the first several years, it's not about the material. I mean, it is. It's to get you through to the next level. But that first, like, several months, it's not about the material, especially not that first time on stage. It's about just getting on stage. Because the material is going to have not be funny, because you never did stand-up in your life. That's fine. And the material is going to be, you know, you're not going to use it anymore. So it's just about getting comfortable on stage. That's all it's about. It's about, you know, stand up. Everyone is like scared to start it. And, you know, it can be scary. You know, it's vulnerable. It's vulnerable. You're standing on stage and you're telling, even if you're not saying something deep about yourself, you're still telling somebody something that you thought was funny and they may not.
Yeah.
And you have to find the way to say it so that they will. So don't waste that's not tip number one to anybody thinking about starting stand up. Do not waste another day. Start right now. It's all about, sleep on the stage if you have to. At one point, I worked in a comedy club and I had keys to it. And many nights I was there so late closing up that I had to be there so early the next morning that I just slept there. And I slept on the stage. You want to be as comfortable as possible on the stage. That's why I said to you, Nate, when I first saw you perform, I said, I bet you come from a theater background. And I was right, because you had stage presence. You had confidence. So what you're doing is not so much on the material. It's building confidence so that you are not afraid to try so much different material that you're going to have to go through. Failure, trial, error. It's just trying stuff. Who knows what's going to click with an audience? Who knows what's going to be funny? Try everything. But if you're not experienced on stage, you're not going to feel comfortable to try everything. You're going to be scared. So don't worry about the material. Get out there as soon as possible.
That's, yeah. And another big thing to go along with that is that, like, no one cares if you don't do well.
Uh-huh.
Like, especially if you go to an just a normal open mic, like, that it's just comics. If you go up there and just, like, eat it, no one cares.
Yeah.
Because, one, like, they know, most likely they'll know it's your first time, and they'll be more excited for you, and they know kind of what you're going through. But then also, like, they are going to bomb immediately after you.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to go up, and no one's going to laugh at them either.
Yeah.
And, like, it's like what you said. It's to get comfortable. It's like the, it's like in Karate Kid, like the wax on, wax off. Like, you got to learn
the movement. Yeah. The muscle movement and the muscle memory.
Exactly. Yeah.
You just have to, like the stage is your home. Like, you feel more comfortable up there than you do in your own skin off stage in reality with people. That's the point that you want to get to.
Yeah. Like, it's not like in the NBA, like people, like teams don't just like get there and then immediately play the game ever.
Yeah.
No sport does that. Like, they get the chance to like go into the stadium and, you know, shoot around and kind of just, you know, be a part of the
warm up
environment. Yeah. Yeah, warm up before they're even able to, and that's pretty much what like all of that is for. Especially your first time is just to know like, okay, this is what this looks like, and this is what this feels like.
And since you brought up the open mics, I'll say everybody, if you can, make sure your first show is an open mic. I've heard a lot of guys that their first show was a real show, but then again, sometimes in your town, that's depending on where you live. If you live in a small town, that might be the only option. Or I've also heard a lot, like, I want to start stand-up and I want to get up right away, like you said, but I can't find any place that around me. I live in a small area. Okay, if that's the case, start an open mic. If there's no open mics in your town, start one. Even if you've never done stand-up before, just start one. Just go to a bar, a coffee shop, your friend that has a place, whatever, and then, you know, put a sign-up sheet. Does anybody want to do an open mic? You know what I mean? Go into this Facebook chat rooms in your area, find other comics, and be like, guys, I started an open mic. You know, there's ways to do it. But yeah, as much as – and the second thing is, the first time you get on stage, do not invite anyone that's not a comedian. Don't invite your friends. Don't invite your family. Wait until you've done several mics and you developed you put together your 5 minutes that you're happy with, and then try to get on a show and then invite everybody to that.
I was about to say, Albert, don't even invite anyone to an open mic ever.
Yeah.
No matter how long you're doing it. Don't ever invite anybody to an open mic.
I always say, unless you're thinking about marrying somebody. If you're thinking about if you're thinking about marrying somebody, you bring her to to the open mic. If she sits there with you for 3 hours through that nonsense, you marry her.
and isn't like, can we leave?
Yeah.
Dude, that's a really good litmus test for like, this is gonna happen.
Yeah, just come with me to this open mic. I want to try some new stuff. I'm going last, and there's 30 comics.
And also, I will talk to all of them and not include you.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's how you know that you found the one.
We will talk about something you do not understand, and I will never address you.
Yeah. Here's the other thing. All right, now we're getting into another point that I wanted to make. This is for everybody, okay? Honesty. Now, I don't mean it in the way of how I meant vulnerability, okay? It kind of goes hand in hand, true. But when I say honesty, let me say it this way. It has to ring true. Your material. It has to ring true. Don't bullshit. Don't make up a joke that didn't happen. 9 times out of 10, the audience can smell that it's bullshit. You go, that didn't happen. I can't tell you how many times I'll be watching a comedy and I go, that didn't happen. And you're,
that didn't fucking happen.
It's got to ring true. And I don't know why this is a fact, but it's just a fact. I don't care how funny it is. If it doesn't ring truth, they're not going to laugh. They're just going to think you're full of shit, okay? And don't get me wrong. I've made stuff up to make a story better or to add a big punchline. You can totally exaggerate things, and as long as it seems totally realistic, you know? Like, you know, this closer that I'm doing right now, you saw it with the chat room. And I lied and said I was a girl. Mm-hmm. And the punchline, when I came clean, the punchline is she goes, it's me too. Like she was a man too, right? That's the punchline.
Yeah.
That whole story's true, except the punchline. That's not true. It was not really a man.
Really?
Yeah, I made that up. I made that up just for a strong punchline.
But I think that drives it home is that...
Absolutely. It's a great punchline.
Really, yeah, it's an amazing punchline. And it's like... It's one of the few, and I told you this the first time you said it. That's one of like the few jokes that I have watched like live since starting stand up that I could not breathe.
Oh, thanks, man.
I thought it was so funny.
Thank you. But, I appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the big thing is like like that, even if you like change the entire way the story ends, as long as a piece of it is grounded in reality, that's all you need, really.
Yeah, the whole story. So you have something to
draw that honesty from.
Yeah, the whole story is a true story, so the whole thing is grounded in reality, and even the punchline that I made up is possible.
Yeah.
So I've heard. I mean, take Steve Martin, for example, who hasn't done stand-up, what, since the early 90s or late 80s?
Yeah.
Or I think that he did a guest appearance on one of Seinfeld's shows pre-pandemic.
And maybe that one time him and Chris Rock were at the Comedy Store.
Right, right, right. But if one of his most famous things that he did was The Cat. I think, right, yeah, The Cat. That was, you know, The Cat, he left the house and The Cat did this and The Cat did that. The Cat called this credit card company and ordered, you know, the Playboy Channel or whatever. Like, he does that whole thing as The Cat. Now, that is somebody that does elaborate things. That is somebody who, like, it's fantasy. That's specifically fantasy. We all know that didn't happen. It's just, it's funny because he just, you know, he's colorful. But anyway, if you're doing a bit trying to tell the audience, like, this is a thing that we all relate to and this really happened or something, and it doesn't ring true, you're going to lose them. It has to ring true.
So to be clear for, I guess, so for people who might not understand, like, the, like, why you said that, like, everything the cat did clearly, obviously, was not real.
Yeah.
But the fact that, like, he, the part that's ringing true and that holds in reality and that where he draws that honesty from is the, like, I leave my home and I just leave my cat there.
Mm-hmm.
And he's there all day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even though, like, all of this other stuff happens, the fact that that one thing is true is all you need, really.
Well, I mean,
or is that what you're trying to say?
It's been a minute since I've heard that particular bit. I don't remember exactly how it starts, but the thing is that he created a fantasy world. We're already accepting that this is something that's not real. He's created a world where his cat talks, and he's and it probably wasn't the first bit he does. He probably does a lot of similar things like that. It's like if you watch a movie. I'm totally fine with fiction. Okay, like, I'm totally fine with, if you create a world, like, you know, I'm not a big Star Wars guy, but I know that's a good example. Like, so people that watch Star Wars, it's like, all this stuff is possible in this universe, you know? But don't give me a movie that's completely reality with real human beings, and then all of a sudden, you know, an alien or somebody's immune to bullets or something like that. It's like, don't mix the worlds, you know? Like, Spider-Man is a great story. You've created a universe where this, you know what I mean, scientific radioactive spider bit a guy. Like, that's the story you've created. The whole story relies on that. But you're not, but if you can't have that happen in, like, Heat. You know, the movie Heat, you can't have, like, a Spider-Man or a Peter Parker who got bit by a spider. It's not about that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, it's, I guess what I'm saying, like, Steve Martin's probably a rare occasion where he got away with it because he did stuff like that all the time. Where
That was his shtick.
Yeah. And mind you, he don't do stand-up no more. And he did a lot. He's probably a lot better at movies than he was stand-up. Okay?
Yeah.
I love Steve Martin. Is, you know what I mean? I love his movies, but, like, you got any albums?
It was a different. I mean, it was a different humor as well back then.
It was, yeah. It was a long time ago. You know, right now we're talking about the most educated audience to stand up comedy that has ever been because of YouTube and Instagram and Netflix specials. Like, people know good comedy now. They know smart comedy.
They know how it works.
Yep. They'll even tell you hacky. They'll even tell you, like, that's someone else's joke. You know what I mean? There's educated audience members now. So, like, they see what Burr does. They see Rogan. They see, you know, Louis C.K. Who else? Kevin Hart. I know a lot of people like. I'm not saying I'm a giant fan of Kevin Hart, but
see, what Augustino's saying is he hates Kevin Hart.
I really like his old albums. Before he was a millionaire. I really liked the relationship stuff, the stuff about his dad. I don't like his new stuff at all.
Really? I really liked Irresponsible. the one that he did in like 2018.
I don't know. I'd have to see it. I wasn't
a
fan of like
also
of Rich Him.
Yeah. Well, it was that Eddie Murphy Richard Pryor thing where like my material, like my act is that I am a famous person.
Yeah, I don't like that. Like,
but I think the reason why it worked back in the day is because that celebrity life. Celebrities were different back then.
Mm-hmm. And like, that, by the way, brings me into the next bullet point that I wanted to go into. But just to wrap this up, it has to ring true. Okay. Like, don't do nothing too. You can exaggerate things. You can make a crazy story funnier by adding punchlines, however you have to. But don't add crazy. Like, add funny to crazy, but don't add crazy to funny.
Mm-hmm.
Don't take something that's just unrealistic. Like the new Fast and the Furious movies. Like, I grew up on the Fast and the Furious movies. I love them. I like, you know, 1 through 6. I don't even care that they're cheesy. It's fun action.
Yeah.
But, like, the last 3, basically, I'm surprised that a whole cast doesn't show up in a Marvel movie soon. Like, they're
superheroes. Dude, that's what people are saying. People are like, oh, the Fast and Furious cast could fight a Marvel
villain. Yeah, like Vin Diesel's literally flying and rescuing a girl in the air like Superman.
And catching people over an interstate.
Yeah, it's insane. You know what I mean? Like, that started as a street racing movie, the first one. You know what I mean? And then, sure, they advanced because they got big celebrities and big budgets later, and it became... I was fine with all that. Like, they're good, fun action movies, but it became... Like, you're introducing like a superhero quality into a move, into a universe that doesn't have that.
That was not, yeah.
Yeah.
It was, Fast and Furious is what Expendables wanted to be so bad.
Yeah.
100%. That's what Fast and Furious became.
Yeah, man. So it's really hard for me to give you an example of something that doesn't ring true. I just know that when you hear it, you hear it, you know?
You know. You're just like.
Yeah. 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 Just like, you know, I was walking down the street and I saw this, you know, I found $200 bills. I mean, maybe that's possible and maybe that's a bad example, but some, I don't know. You'll know it when you hear it. Like, it's got to ring true. It's got to be, you know what I mean? You can make up stuff to add to the story as long as it's realistic, but don't make up the whole story. You know, don't.
I think that was a good way to put it. Add funny to crazy. Don't add crazy to funny.
Yeah.
That's the best way to put it.
Right, exactly. Yeah, add funny to crazy. Because everybody's got a crazy story. But storytelling is one of the hardest things that you could to do on stage. And to make a real story funny is the big challenge. So, like, I got a crazy story. Yeah, but is it funny? So add funny, which I want to get to at one point. Add funny to crazy. But don't add crazy to funny. Exactly.
Yeah.
And then what was the next thing that you said? I said I want to get into... You were talking about celebrities doing stand-up.
Yes.
Famous people, and this is part of the reason why I don't like Kevin Hart's newer stuff. Number one, he's probably got writers now, you know.
Oh, yeah. What, easy.
Yeah. And I liked him back in the day when he was just writing his own stuff and he was talking about his real life. So that brings me into the next point. A very, very important key, one of the most important keys ever in stand-up comedy is to be... relating to people. Always be relating to people, which is why you always go like, this person used to be so funny and I don't like their new stuff. Well, because those people are movie stars now. And Aziz Ansari, you know, some of his older stuff was funny. Now, so I'm at Jay-Z's birthday party, right?
I guess cool, maybe
cool, bro, tell that story on a podcast. But an audience in Louisiana or Kentucky who paid a lot of money to come see you doesn't really relate to that. Maybe a cool story, but it's not very funny. You know, so relating – this is just me picking on celebrities. But but besides celebrities, this goes out to every comic, new, whatever. You have to relate. You have to be relatable. Even if it's like the craziest story and this could only happen to me, in some ways, it has to relate. The funniest things is because an audience can relate to it. Jerry Lewis said once, I listened to an interview with him, and someone asked Jerry Lewis, why do people laugh at you particularly? They go like, why are you funny? They asked Jerry Lewis, and Jerry Lewis goes, I'm not funny. He goes, I'm a mirror. You're funny. I'm a mirror. All I'm doing is reflecting how funny you are back at you. You're relating to them. Example, like, yeah, exactly, dude. You're a mirror. You're just whatever they are. So life, you're talking about life, everyday things that we all go through and experience, and you're making jokes and bits about this, and you're telling them that it happened to you, but the only reason they laugh is because it's happened to them.
Whoa.
Or it could happen to them, or it's happened to somebody they know. It has to be relatable, dude. Again, same quote from the same interview from Jerry Lewis. He said, if you tell somebody, I slipped on a banana peel. If you tell somebody who's never slipped on a banana peel, they're going to say, are you okay? But if you tell somebody who has slipped on a banana peel, I slipped on a banana peel, they're going to go, oh, dude, I've been there.
Whoa. That even kind of goes into kind of the another, I think it's another Steve Martin quote. I think this might be from like his masterclass. He's like, and it goes back to the honesty thing. He was talking about like your opening line, and he was like, if you don't have anything, just tell the truth.
Exactly.
Just point out something in the audience or in the venue. Just tell the truth and give the audience that. Oh yeah, that
honesty. Yeah,
and that's even when Mark Norman was in Austin, I got the chance to talk to him, and he, I don't remember the whole thing that he had, but he was like the one of like the best like joke, I guess, categories is realization. Like the audio, you be telling the audience like, this is how this is, and they're just like, oh yeah, you're 100% right, that is how that is.
And you want to know why it's realization? Because realization is relatable.
Yeah, 100%.
It's relatable, you know.
Yeah,
if you're doing something you know, if your whole act is about slipping on a banana peel, if you were performing in front of people that lived in, you know, Mario Kart, like maybe that would kill.
Dude, it would murder. It would so murder.
But we live in reality. Therefore, when you talk about things that are real, that will be the most relatable. And the most relatable things are the things people laugh at the most.
That's why I feel like that's why like there are a lot of comics that find success in like darker humor.
Yeah,
because like, wow, the comedians that do it right, because dark humor is very easy to just have no one have a good time. But like when you're able to like do it, that is the deepest part of that gold mine.
Yeah, and don't make any mistake about it that when I say like, you know, the funniest stuff is relatable, that doesn't mean that you have to do a bunch of stuff that's been done to death. Because you're going to run into that a lot. You're just trying to be so relatable. You're going to do a lot of common jokes. And by the way, like almost everything's been done to death. Like I said, you can find a bit in everything. Well, guess what? A lot of people probably have. So, yeah. You know.
100%.
But what you're going to do is you're going to add your unique point of view on that subject. You know, to say different than everybody else. This is the way I look at things. Just look at it a little bit different. And you can bring up the subject in a relatable way, but you don't have to go into the obvious jokes about it.
Yeah.
You know, I think we talked about this last episode where I was saying, like, you know, complaining is the best comedy. You know, we're always complaining about something. And then people always will tell you, like, you know, when I go to a comedy club, I want to break from reality. I don't want to talk about politics and stuff like that. And that's fine. I won't talk about politics, but I got news for you. You're not having a break from reality.
I'm talking about everything else.
Yeah, everything I'm talking about is what's wrong with reality. You know, cell phones suck. You know what I mean? But like, even, people are rude, whatever.
But the thing is, what's ironic about that statement, like, break from reality, like, really, that's what you want, though.
Mm-hmm.
is you want to relate to somebody about, I guess, how shitty reality is.
Exactly.
And that's because, like, when you go to a movie, you're like, I want to break from reality. And you go watch movies, it's like, that's also based
on a reality. Yeah. Of course, again, yeah. Like, you got your Star Wars, you got your Marvel, DC. Like, this is a new type of universe. And it is an escape, but it's based off of some reality. But it's something that's happening to somebody else. So it's entertaining for you to watch.
Exactly. It's not at your expense.
Yes. So, like, I'm basically not the guinea pig, but I'm the, what's the word for it, like the person who's taking the bullets.
You're the sacrificial lamb.
Yes.
Of everybody else's problems.
Let me do it for you. Like, I'll say it happened to me.
Basically what we're saying is that stand-up comedians are Jesus and we should be treated as such.
Yeah, yeah, man,
treated as such.
You know, it's it's the truth, dude. You know, so you've got to give that. At the end of the day, everything I've said today comes down to being honest. Mm-hmm. It's just honesty. But yeah, I mean, you're gonna try to steer away from, you know, stuff that's been done before and a common premise, as they call them. But when you're picking on things that you can complain about and that will be related to people, you're going to come across common things. So that's how you have to start developing your own point of view on things and, you know, make everything better.
And even with those common premises, I mean, the most famous story is the hero's journey. Mm-hmm. And in some form or fashion, in any piece of literature, the hero's journey is in there.
Yeah.
And so, like what you said earlier, like, you'll find common premises and, like, stuff that's been done before. But
yeah, what did you do with it?
Exactly. What did you do with it? What makes it unique to you? Like, it's fine as long as you're not, like, stealing a comic's bit.
Right, of course.
Like, you and I might have the same bit about, like, Italian restaurants.
Yeah.
Like, the same, like, the premise is just like, oh, like, the food at Italian restaurants sucks. Like, we might have that same premise,
yeah,
but we'll take it in two different directions.
Exactly. Dude, I knew a guy once that would make fun of comics because I think one time a comic came up to him and they were like, bro, like, you do a bit about this, and he's like, I also do a bit about that, and he was like, yeah, but they're completely, you don't own the market
completely
on
different
Italian restaurants. So
yeah,
so I think dude, it was he babe. Said Costco in his bit. He said Costco, and the other guy goes, dude, I got a bit about Costco. It was like, you have a bit about Costco. Yeah, I just said the word Costco. Like, that's not even this.
Yeah. And you're like, so do you think?
We started to go, like, we started to make fun of him. We're like, dude, you said the word the.
I got a bit about that.
Dude, I say the word the.
I say the word the. Are you stealing my jokes? Dude, that's like going up to every black comic and just being like, hey, man, you can't talk about race because I heard this guy over at Vulcan talk about race, so that's, you can't do that. You stole his act.
Yeah, dude, you can't hump the stool. I hump the stool.
I hump the stool, dude. Come on, bro.
I
have a dog too.
I have a dog. Dude, I just broke up with my girlfriend.
Bro, you can't talk about that on stage.
I love my girlfriend. Dude, I love your girlfriend too. Wait, what?
what did you just say?
Are you the reason we broke up? No, dude, but was it with you last time that I was talking about that I think eventually every comic will go into storytelling at one point in their career?
Yes.
Yeah, right? So talking about being relating, I think that, yeah, that definitely eventually happens to everyone. Like, the longer you do stand-up, eventually you're going to do a storytelling. And I said this, I think, 7 years ago. I used to say this all the time. I go, this is what I think the future of stand-up comedy is. It is not necessarily someone who just murders in laughter. I love those guys. I absolutely love the stand-up comedians that are just fucking funny, dude. Everything's funny, you know. But then I think what it is it's somebody who's going to make you laugh, cry, remember something from your past, feel sad, feel happy. You know, when you leave the show, that's my goal, is that I want to hit every emotion. If I hit every emotion, that's my goal. Some guys who are probably more correct than I am, their only goal is to make people laugh, which I feel that I do. But more than that, I want you to leave, and I want to remind you of something that happened in your life. Maybe I'm telling you a specific story of something that happened with me and my parents or my sisters. And I want you to leave with, you're going to feel nostalgia when you leave. I want you to leave going like, whether your parents are still here or they're passed away, you're going to leave with like a little bit of a tear and a smirk going like, God, I miss them. But it was a fun time we had, you know? And I think the future is a one-man show. And I said that 7 years ago, and I think we are getting closer and closer and closer to that. The one-man show, you know, it's somebody who comes out and does everything. Like, I've constantly always built my hour to be sort of like a one-man show. And I know a lot of people don't like him, but I think one of the most brilliant stand-up comedians ever is Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
Bill Cosby is amazing. And if you go, and I think every comedian, I don't care if you're a woman and someone molested you when you were young, I'm really sorry about that. This has got nothing to do with this. Look past. You still listen to Michael Jackson, all right? So fucking knock it off. So every comedian needs to watch Bill Cosby himself. The special called Bill Cosby Himself. Everybody needs to watch it. It's a stand-up special before stand-up specials. And it was like one that they aired on television, you know, before Netflix was around. It was a stand-up special, but the way that the set was built, it's in such a great order. He's got two bits that have nothing to do with family or his stories or jokes. He's got two bits. One of them's on people doing drugs, and the other one is on the dentist. He does a whole dentist bit. Each one of those is about 10 minutes each. And he opens with those two. Why? Because they got nothing to do with the rest of his set. They're just funny jokes. Okay? It's funny observational material. Then he has a whole chunk of stuff on his wife and marriage. And then he's got a whole chunk of stuff on his kids and being a father. Okay? And it literally goes like that. It goes like, just jokes, marriage to kids. It's like building, you see his life before your eyes. And then once more towards the kid stuff. And then after kids, he gets into his parents and memories. And then it goes into, so my hour is always in this order. It's like quick, funny stuff up front. This is some more good key points to remember when building a set.
Yeah.
Upfront stuff should be whatever gets to a punchline the quickest should be the first thing that you say. Whatever joke that you have that gets a laugh the fastest, that's the joke you need to open with. Other stuff you need to open with is things that introduce us to you. Like, I'm Italian. If you got jokes about being Italian, you got jokes about your name. A lot of newer comics always have a joke about their name. That's the stuff you do up front. Hey, my name is this. You do the joke about your name. I'm Italian. Letting people get to know you. I'm like, 12 years in, so I don't do that stuff anymore. But I still get open with something that gets a punchline right away. Get a laugh from them right away. Whether it be, and if you don't have one, like Steve Martin said, say something honest in the room. I literally write on my set list every time I go on stage. I write at the top, intro. I just write intro.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be something different every time. Whatever city I'm in, I might say something different about what I experienced when I'm there. But just get a laugh right away. But then now I'm doing all this stuff to let people get to know me about, like, I'm married or I've been divorced or stuff like that. You know, for a long time, my opener was, hey, guys, I've been married for for a long time, this was my opener. I used to say, like, hey, anybody celebrating anything tonight? And people would go, woo, and I go, I'm celebrating. I finally just paid off my wife's wedding ring. People start to clap, and I go, don't clap. We've been divorced for a year and a half. Huge laugh from the beginning, right away. You know what I mean? Every time. You're just easing from crowd work into – and then I always go towards, like, the as you go, the bits get longer, and then I always do stories at the end. Which we'll talk about briefly, storytelling, because I did want to keep this episode a little bit shorter. But yeah, so that's pretty much it, you guys. So to the beginners, don't waste any time. Get up there right away, because it's all about building confidence and being comfortable as possible on stage. Honesty, things have to ring true. Things have to be relatable and be vulnerable. You'll be digging deep.
Yeah. Something that was really cool about what you just said about like putting together your hour. Cause I'm in the process of like trying to write some TV shows.
Uh-huh.
And like getting that pilot down, that first pilot. And a big piece of advice that I got was, your pilot should be all about establishing the world that this is taking place.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing with that, like with what you just said, like that, like that first 10, 20 minutes is establishing the world. Mm-hmm. And that world is, first off, this is funny. This is going to be a comedy show. And then like, name, I'm Italian, married, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. We got to, we get to know you, like, bro, I know you know, when you're new, 3 minutes on stage, 5 minutes on stage, they have to get to know you. When you forget about being a new comic, when you showcase for Montreal, that's a 4.5 minute set. And you know what they want in 4.5 minutes? They want to get to know you. Get to know who you are, your past, your ethnicity, where you come from. We want to hear jokes, and we want to see that you can do longer bits in 4.5.
Yeah.
So it's crazy for people to think like, how could I stand on stage and people are gonna just like me right away? Likeability is another thing. They have to like you. You know, you can have a great opening bit, but if you're not likable, they're not gonna laugh. And then if you got an hour, you'll work your way to get likable. But if you don't have an hour, you got a 5-minute, 7-minute set, you have to make them like you
that quick.
From the beginning. You have to go up like being a nice person. Be friendly to the host. Be courteous. Smile. You know what I mean? Don't be rude. Like, shake the host's hand. Don't. I don't know who needs to hear this in the comedy world. This is a rule that I can't believe is not told as much as it should be, because I still see it all the time. Never leave the stage empty. Never leave the stage empty. You've heard that before, haven't you?
Yeah.
You never leave. I see it all the time. The host will bring you up and then walk off before you even get up there, or vice versa. When you're finished with your set, you'll walk off before the host walks up there. Never leave the stage empty.
No.
Always someone has to be standing in front of that audience. Yeah, don't create that air. Anyway, I don't even know why I went into
that was a real personal thing. You were just like, you've seen too many empty stages.
Yeah. And then if we really want to talk basics, move. Sorry, am I being too loud?
Oh, no, you're totally fine.
Okay. If we really want to talk basics to the newcomers that are listening, move that fucking microphone stand out of your face. Okay. Either you got two options with the microphone. Leave it in the stand and don't touch it and perform that way. Or if you're going to take it out of the microphone stand, grab that mic stand, put it way behind you, and then go. People take it out, but they leave the stand there, so it's blocking your face. And as you paste while you talk, we're watching you walk around the mic stand that shouldn't be there. And you don't even realize it. That's how we know you're new. I can look at a comic and I can tell you how long he's been doing comedy based off of the little things he's doing this shit. Watch. Hold on. Do I have enough slack? I got another one over here. It's stuck under my table. Doing this shit while you talk.
Are you not a fan of playing with the cord, playing with the cable?
It's not that I'm not a fan. That's how I know you're a rookie.
Yeah. You're not comfortable with just being.
You're not comfortable with yourself standing on stage. That's like chicks that play with their hair when they talk to you.
Oh, yeah.
They're nervous.
And she's like, just speak to me.
Yeah. So anyway, sorry, I get passionate about this shit, bro. Sorry. We'll wrap it up here, but I promised you and the people at home in this part two that I was going to show you my method, which I've shown people before on here, but hey, there's always newcomers, and to build an hour, okay?
Give it to me.
An hour is 60 minutes of material. What is 60 divided by 12?
Not five.
Think it is five. I wanted to make sure I wasn't full of shit before I check. What I said,
genius.
60 divided by 12 is 5, right? Yeah. That means that's 5 minutes a month. That's it. 5 minutes a month. And you have an hour.
You got an hour.
I'm not saying if you just started comedy and you do a brand new 5 every month, in a year you're going to have an hour. Sure, you will. You'll have an hour's worth. Is it going to be great?
It's going to be good.
Yeah, I'm not promising you that. But I am saying your goal that seems so far away is not as far as you think.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It's as easy as that. And you go like, how am I ever going to build an hour set or a half hour set? Because all I get is 5 minute sets. Well, it just takes 5 minutes a month. So that whole month, you're working on that 5 minutes until it is fucking rock solid.
Yeah.
You know? All right. So here's what I do. I get a nice little piece of paper. Can you see?
I can see.
Okay, cool. I go down the middle of the piece of paper and I do a nice little crucifix for the Catholics, okay? I just go down. You just do a nice little cross.
Okay? You know what this looks like? This looks like whenever someone is explaining the time travel rules in a movie.
I've been told that before. Like. That's like a scientist's fucking notebook. It's like, no, it's just how I just do it. And then what I do, let me see if you can see that. So I wrote, you can see it says home, right?
Mm-hmm.
Home. This says new, and I think down here I wrote premise. This is blank, and I'll tell you why in a second. You can call these whatever you want to call them. I call them home because, or you can call it safe, home. Those are your jokes that you're comfortable with. Those are, they're done. They work. You know what I mean? You know they work.
You can tell them they're going to get a laugh.
Yeah, they're ready for the big stage. And when I say the big stage, I mean, my method was always trying bits at open mics until I felt they're ready to go to like a bar show, until I felt they're ready to go to a real paid gig. I call those, that side of the page is called home. That's your set. That's your set list.
Yeah.
Okay. Now this side that says new, this is where you're going to put new jokes, obviously. Right. But, well then what's premise? I'll tell you what premise is. Premise are, obviously you know what a premise, it's an idea for a new joke that may become a joke one day in your set, okay?
Yeah.
And premise is the category in this box is also for jokes that are a joke. You've already decided it wasn't just a premise. It's a joke. It's going to work one day. It's got legs, as they say, okay? Yeah. But it's not quite there yet. Right? Like there's still, I'm still working on it. I'm still missing. What can I add to it? Okay. And the reason that you don't put premise under new is finished.
Yeah. You have it ready for an open mic.
Yeah. And that's why you're going to take new and you're going to move it to home, but you put it from premise to new first. So you can see where to put it in home, because like I told you before, I build my hours in a particular order, like a one-man show. Like this goes into that, that'll go into that, and that'll be great. Okay, so now the goal is obviously to fill this up, and this second sorry, it's probably hard to see with the light, this second one down here where I wrote nothing, that is your second 30 minutes. This is your first 30 minutes, this is your second 30 minutes. Okay. And then what you're going to do is you're going to go like, this is stuff I'm working on. All right. All right. That one's finally done. Let me move it up here. Now you have all these jokes that are done. You just need to know where to put them here. And then you're going to go like,
interesting.
Well, this is a joke about my girlfriend. So that's going to go with the relationship stuff. This is a joke about my dog that can go like, you know, I go from marriage stuff to dog stuff. You know what I mean? This is a story, so that can go after that story. Well, this story doesn't really make sense to go last. It's actually funnier if I add it to that bit, but that should go over there then. And then you build it. Okay, so then you have them all in the order that you want. Obviously, get yourself a new piece of paper and write them in the order that you want. A lot of people do this stuff on their phone. I'm an old school guy, okay? But what I do is once my set list is done, I take a picture of it with my phone, and I just have it in my phone, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then And then here's what you're going to do. So now you got the order that you want for, you know, to build your hour. Then I go, you kind of know what 5 minutes is of your jokes. You know what I mean? You know, like that says about 5 minutes. So then what you're going to do is, okay, that bit and that bit, which you've already put in order, that to there is 5 minutes. And you're going to go like that. And that to there is 5 minutes. Oh, that's a longer bit. That alone takes 5 minutes right there. Boom. Okay. Now you're sitting there at the Romo room one night and Rob comes up to you and he goes like, bro, you know, fucking so-and-so didn't show up for his spot. You want to do five? You bust out your phone. You got the picture of your list and it shows right there which ones are five. Now it's up to you to decide which 5 minutes do I want to do tonight. And this is how you build an hour when people only give you 5 minute sets.
Huh.
And also, I also told you before, the beginning, you got to crush. The beginning of every set, you gotta get a laugh right away. You gotta prove to them that you're funny. Don't save the good stuff for the end, because by the time they hear your best joke, they already convinced themselves that you weren't funny.
Yeah, you're not winning them back.
A good rule of thumb is they say you're supposed to open with your second best joke, and then close with your best, or vice versa. You know what I mean? But
yeah, wasn't it like a bunch of dudes? Bunch of like the Netflix guys were moving their closers to the beginning.
Yeah, I remember Louis C.K. was like doing that.
Yeah, because that like statistic came out that people only watch like 27 minutes.
Yeah, every single
before they zone out.
Yeah, Louis C.K. said that every closer, forget about specials in general, his closer the next year automatically became his opener because that forced his material to always advance because it would have to be stronger to follow the last one. Yeah, dude. So this system here, right? You got like 5 minutes, 5 minutes, 5 minutes. So you know you have to open strong and you have to close strong every set, and you're doing a lot of 5 minute sets. Okay.
Yeah.
So that means that this is going to be a really strong joke, and this is going to be a really strong joke, and so is this, and so is this. So if you're breaking it up into fives like sets like that, you got to make sure that every single one starts strong and ends strong, which means once somebody goes, hey, Nate, can you do 30? And you're like, oh, shit, I'm about to do 30 for the first time. Now all that is just doing, those 5 minutes in the row you want. But guess what? You're used to doing them in 5 minute increments. So now you have a big closer every 5 minutes of the 30. You see what I'm saying? Whoa. And not to mention opener. So you're just trained. So say what you want about only 5 minute sets. You're fucking going to be killing it, dude.
Yeah.
If that's,
I didn't even think.
Yeah. And then let's say you're on stage and somebody says you're doing, 10. But then you're up there. The next comic didn't show up yet. They'll do this move to you, right? Which means stretch. The next guy's not here. You're going to have to go longer. So now you got to do 5 more minutes. Well, good for you. You already got it right there in the order.
Whoa.
Now what if the comic finally shows up, but you're in the middle of your next five, not to a closer yet, right? So they give you the light. No worries. I got fucking 8 closers. I just got to pick one from one of my 5 minute sets. You know what I'm saying?
Dude.
Yeah. So that's if you follow those guidelines that I gave you earlier, and if you follow the rules of always open funny, always close funny, and let's put my 5 minute sets in order, you will have a killer hour eventually, or half hour, or 20 minutes. Dang. And just keep doing, get on stage as much as you possibly can. If you can get up every day and they want to give you 5 minutes every day, that's fine. Do a different 5 minutes every single day over and over and over. And that's how you can practice that set. You can do 20 minutes in 4 days.
Dang, and just work it.
Yeah. You could do a half hour, dude, in fucking 6 days. A half hour set. So,
Oh, gosh, you kind of blew my mind there.
Good. I'm glad, dude. I hope that it's inspiring.
You kind of fucking blew my mind.
Yeah, man. I'm dyslexic, so that particular chart works for me. Do it however anybody wants to do it that you feel more comfortable. I did it that way because it helps me keep order. I do things like that with everything. My to-do list for the day, you know, stuff that I got to put on my website. You know, I even plan. I'm a huge planner. I'm a big believer in a man without a plan is not a man. I'm a big planner. Too. Yeah, dude. Like, I hate when the weekend comes and, you know, and your girl is all like, what are we doing? And I'm like, I already know what we're doing. I planned it.
You're like,
we're going to have a fun weekend because I planned it. And guess what? If we want to do nothing, I planned that too. I made time for rest. You know,
don't worry. We have a break period.
So I'm very organized, and this helps me. It helps me stay organized. And however way you want to do it, just make sure you're writing your set list in the order you want. And when a joke graduates to that list, you put it in the place where it's supposed to go, and you just build your 5-minute sets with every 5 minutes. There's a closer.
That's insane.
Yeah, dude.
So how long have you been teaching, have you been lecturing stand-up at USC?
I haven't. You know what's funny? Speaking of Jerry Lewis, he actually taught film at USC. A lot of people don't know that.
You really?
Imagine when you that. Were, when you were,
yeah. When you were explaining that, I was like, it feels like I'm, I was like, it. I flashed back to like beginning of the pandemic when I was just sitting in a college class on Zoom looking at a chart.
No, dude.
I feel like I'm being taught the Zoeta method.
Just want to help. It works for me. I don't guarantee it's going to work for you, but I have been doing this 12 and a half years, and I know comedy. It's one of the only things I've never quit, and it's one of the only things I've ever been good at. And I know structure really, really well. And, you know, and if I can just help anybody or encourage anybody to start stand-up or to, you know, grow faster, I'm happy to.
Yeah. Well, I thank you for that because like you said, like you're a planner. Like when I've talked to you about this, like I come from a theater background and like improv and whatnot. And like, I can do that. Like improv got down when it comes to stand up because of how much I want it to work. Mm-hmm. I'm very like boots in the ground on like about it and like not wavering. And so I need that structure with stand up and I've been having a hard time finding it, but that really just like, I was like, when you like it were explaining that to me, I was like, it's that easy.
Yeah. I mean, it's not easy by any means. It sounds easy on paper.
It's but like, it made sense to me. And I was like, oh, that can be applied.
You know what you like have applying to
that
do.
Would be easy. Yeah.
You know, now you know how to do it, but it's just like, it's getting the closer. It's building that 100%. Set. So it's a lot of on stage doing the same 5-minute sets over and over again. Just try fucking everything. And then there's going to be sets where you're just trying everything in no particular order and just scrapping what doesn't work and just taking what works and adding that to your list in the place where it should go. It's just, you know what, dude? It's the part I love about stand-up. If I was killing it all the time and every single word out of my mouth was genius, I don't think I would like stand-up very much.
No.
You know?
That's why Dave Chappelle left. He said, I got too good.
Yeah, man. It's like I like going on stage not knowing if it's going to work. Mm-hmm. Obviously not when I'm getting paid, but
obviously not when they want me to do well.
Yeah.
Cause I mean, it doesn't matter like how good a joke is. Nothing beats the first time that joke worked.
Yes.
Nothing will ever beat the first time that joke.
And
worked.
You figured out how to make it work, especially one that you, it's bothering you so much, like I can't make that work. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah,
sometimes you gotta put it away and bring it back later.
Yeah, like what Taika Waititi writes scripts. He writes the script and then just leaves it for a certain amount of time and then comes back and just tries to write the script from memory, like tries to rewrite it and like compares him.
Oh, that's
and
funny.
everything that was left in that new draft, he was like, that was all the good stuff.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, because when you go, I mean, I write scripts too. Yeah, when I go back and read something the second time, I'm like looking at it with new eyes you know, you're just like, dude, with stand up, you're constantly growing as a performer, as a writer, and every time you revisit something you've already created with your new eyes and new things you've learned applying to it, you can just make things better.
Yeah.
But anyway, dude, I hope that was helpful for everybody.
It was super helpful.
thank you, man, for joining me. No, thank you. I appreciate it. I love talking stand-up, and I'm always happy to do it. Like I always say, if anybody wants to ask me questions or you just want advice or just to talk, I know it's fucking rough times out there. You know, certain parts of the world are getting, you know, masked up again. LA's masked up again, bro.
Are they really? Yeah. Like, required?
Yeah, on June 15th, we were wide open, like as if nothing ever happened. That was the day we were promised. And then last Sunday, they put a mask mandate back.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Dude, they... Because Texas politically is just a freaking... It's the Wild West. But they... They said we're back in, like, the red zone or something.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much everybody's like, nah, you're not getting us back in masks.
Yeah.
Like, even the people that are like they were like, yes, no, wear a mask everywhere. Because, mm-hmm. like, I was like that. I was like, yeah, no, wear a mask. But now, especially since, like, so many people are vaccinated, like, we've gone so long that it's just like, no.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's like, dude, we've burned our masks already.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go buy ones.
My mom stopped making them.
She was making them?
No, everybody's mom was making them. Everybody's mom was making them.
I know a few people that were making them, yeah.
Dude, did you see the crowd last night at the Bucks game?
No, I didn't even watch it.
Dude, they had the stadium full. It's like 17,000 people. And then outside... had like 29,000 people.
Wow.
Just out, like, it looked like nothing had happened.
And it was in Milwaukee?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And it was crazy.
Wow. Yeah, it dude, you know, they've our sheriff, our LA County sheriff came out and said that they're not going to enforce it now that they brought the mask mandate back. The LA County sheriff was just like, I'm not going to enforce it. He goes, there's absolutely no science to back it. We're done with it. We're done with masks. But, dang. You know, so basically all that means is like, we won't give you a ticket, which they kind of never would have anyway. But the only thing, I never wore a mask, dude. I never wore a mask. Like,
really?
The whole pandemic. I obviously, to go into a store or like, you know, a restaurant when they make you wear it until you sit down, I was doing it because my motto is, if you go to somebody's house and they ask you to take your shoes off, you take your shoes off.
You take your shoes off.
That's their house. Whatever it takes to make your business stay open, I will respect. But as soon as I walk out that door, I take my mask off. I was not... Yeah, I wasn't wearing it the whole time. And look at me, I'm alive, okay? But, you know...
Well, the thing that's crazy down here is that people are like, you told us we just had to get the vaccine and we'd be fine. And now you're telling us that even though we have the vaccine, we still need to wear a mask.
It's a scare tactic to scare the people who haven't got vaccinated yet, which is like all they're doing. It's all they're doing. Every time you turn on the news, they're doing a speech about it. It's like, you know, they're not talking about the crisis at the border. They're not talking about, you know, the gas prices have gone through the roof. They just turn on the news and they're just talking about the vaccine, you know. Well, most states are at least 50% vaccinated, but we're still in the red. That just goes to show you that either A, the vax don't do shit, or your old red zone, you were lying. You know what I mean?
We weren't really in the red zone ever.
Partially, I think the whole mask thing in California has to do with Gavin Newsom, who is our governor.
Mm-hmm.
And
still? Is he not?
No, he's still our governor, but in September, we vote to recall him or not. So here's the thing. His first mask mandate, which was like over a year ago, he put into force immediately after he signed a contract with China, like a $4 million contract to buy masks from them. Okay. So this China's manufacturing the masks and we have a deal with them. Now, if you make it mandatory for masks, that means that when you go to a restaurant or, you know, a supermarket and they tell you you have to wear a mask, if you don't have one, they have to provide one for you. So even the comedy store was having masks there. If you didn't have one, here you go. So now you have, you're like, well, why would anyone make money off masks? They're free. They're not free. The businesses who have to supply them are the places that you have to wear them at. they're buying them. They're buying them by the case. And, you know, so my theory is that he, you know, initially put that into place because of the whole, like, they were making money en masse.
Yeah.
Secondly, I think that most politicians are in bed with China and they probably got a deal going to manufacture all the masks to China. Okay, that's my own theory. And now I think because he's getting recalled again, either A, they're like, fuck, we still got 10,000 boxes left, or
we gotta get rid of them.
We gotta get rid of these before I leave.
Back.
Yeah, or it's almost like a threat. I take it like a threat. Like, you wanna go back to this? You better not recall me.
Yeah.
Because he took away everything when there was talks of recall. No, you can go back out again. You could take the mask off. We're wide open. When everyone threatened to recall him. But now the recall's still happening and it's up in September.
He was like, what do you mean?
Now it's a threat. But I feel like he's just burying himself.
Everyone's like, dude, it's insane.
Yeah.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know what to believe anymore. I mean, hey, just fucking, you know, do your best to be a good person and respect other people.
Just move down here, dog. Move down here, man.
Yeah.
You're wasting your time up there.
I was going to go to this. Some people ask me, like, what do you want to do for your birthday? I like to go to this bar around the corner from my house, which is like an 80s retro bar that literally has all these 80s arcade games in them, like 30 of them. So you can play all day for free as long as you're drinking and eating at the bar.
Yeah.
That's like my favorite bar, but I was like, I really don't want to be wearing a mask playing a video game, and so I'm probably not going to do it, you know? Anyway, it was nice while it lasted. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. I'm telling you, dude, I can find you an arcade bar like that down here, and you don't have to wear a mask.
Yeah, probably. Anyway, the rest of my tour for the remainder of the year is all going to be red states.
That I don't have to wear a mask at.
I don't have to worry about them freaking canceling the gig.
They're like, why? They're like, why is Augustino going to Mississippi only?
Totally, dude. Anyway,
it's Augustino's Bible Belt tour.
I appreciate the Bible Belt tour. That's hilarious. I appreciate you, dude. Thanks for doing the show. I'm glad we were able to
Thank
knock out
me,
this part too. I hope that people found it helpful. If anybody wants to reach out to me and talk about stand up, it's been a dark, depressing year, and it still kind of is in ways. Go to homeschooledpod.com, click on contact, and you can fill out that message card, and those just go right to me. So if you just want to say what's up, or you want to ask a question or something. And then besides that, speaking of Masterclass, they are a sponsor of this podcast, actually. So if you guys are thinking about learning more about stand-up, I mean, everything, guitar, playing, they have cooking classes by Gordon Ramsay. They've got about everything, script writing, acting classes. If you guys are thinking about any of this, use the link in the description, or you can go to homeschoolpod.com, click on sponsors. And normally it's, I think, about 80 or 90 bucks a course. But if you subscribe for the whole year, use my link, you can subscribe for the whole year for 180. So it's like if you were going to take two courses, you get the whole year and you can take literally every single one and like share
it. That's like,
yeah,
that's like $100 off.
Yeah, like share it with your roommate, you know, and go halvesies on it and be like, oh, you want to learn how to cook? Well, I want to learn how to fucking write scripts or whatever, you know what I mean? And you can do it all, acting, writing, screenplay, you know what I mean? So you might as well get the whole year. Use the link in the description and go to homeschoolpod.com, click on sponsors. Don't forget, where am I going to be? What do I got coming up? Oh, August 2nd through the 8th. I am in Las Vegas, Nevada at the Stratosphere Hotel the 2nd through the 8th. After that, I will be coming back to Paso Robles, California. That's August 12th. I'm actually co-headlining that with Jimmy Schubert. That should be a lot of fun. And I think you guys are getting Jimmy Schubert at the Romo Room right after that.
I was about to say, yeah, I had to post his event the other day.
Dude, go watch him. He's a beast, dude. He's a beast. Go say hi to him. He's such a nice guy, too. And then August 14th, I'm in Boston, Massachusetts. Well, technically Worcester, Massachusetts. So you guys are out in the Worcester area or Boston, come see me. I'm having Lee Syatt open that one. And that is August 14th. Yeah, dude. It's going to be Lee already lives there, so.
I need Lee Syatt to follow me back on Instagram. He told me, he was like, yeah, man. He was like, follow me on Instagram. And I did. And I needed him to follow me back.
That piece of shit fucking.
I know, dude. That's why I didn't wish him a happy birthday.
I was going to say that fucking Jew. he loves those jokes. Anyway, homeschoolpod.com. Click on tour. I hope to see you guys at one of the shows. And don't forget about my t-shirt, the Only Love Can Save the World shirt, which is named after my my tour this year. And on the back of my t-shirt now, I have all the tour dates. So if you were at a show or are planning on being at a show, it's a really cool souvenir. Homeschoolpod.com. Click on merch. Cool. Thank you. I want to give a big thank you to Nate for being on this podcast today, and a big thank you to all the listeners who continue to support, and the ones that are newly discovering us. Thank you for checking us out, and please don't forget to hit subscribe and subscribe on YouTube. It's really important to me. And that's it, you guys. Have a great rest of your weekend.
We did it.
We did it, dude.
We did it.
All right, bro. I'm out of here.
Everyone's going to be. All right. I'm gone too.
Have a great rest of your night, and have a great weekend, dude.
Hey, dude, you too. I'll talk to you later.
I'll talk to you later. Go ahead and log off. Everybody, I'll see you guys next time. I'm Augustino Zoida. Don't forget that only love can save the world. This is Homeschooled Podcast. Peace.
Homeschooled Podcast.
Homeschool.
The Homeschooled Podcast. Why? Because he was homeschooled.
I don't want to do that.
No, okay.
I don't want to do that at all.